Sweet. Means we're back.
We're back on, and it's someone else can talk today, not just us. We have a guest. Lisa is here.
Welcome, Lisa.
Hello.
Lisa is a local legend, has spent a lot of time in the clinic with us. Good runner, experienced runner, has got some crazy stuff planned soon, which we'll touch on later.
Mm.
And well, the main reason we asked Lisa on is because Lisa is a sports nutritionist.
Yeah.
And we've talked to a nutritionist a long time ago.
Like over nearly 2 years ago, right?
One of the earlier episodes, but we thought we'd revisit that because you can't have enough opinions and information in regards to nutrition because most of us are pretty terrible at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just got Lisa here. Not to worry, we can always get you guys to comment and ask questions online, and Lisa can jump on that and go answer whatever questions you have.
I have a question.
Sure.
What's the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian?
So a lot of it comes down to training.
Yeah.
So a dietitian tends to be more very much looking at the sort of the macronutrient, micronutrient composition of the diet, and very much based around protocols for specific conditions and things like that. Whereas a nutritionist takes a little bit more of a holistic approach. So I would look at when I work with clients, I look at not only what they're eating, but what their exercise levels are, what their sleeping habits are, what sort of other stresses they might have going on in their life, and how that's then impacting their food intake and how food's affecting them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
But before we go into nutrition, let's have a chat about Lisa herself.
Okay.
Lisa, tell us about your running, because you're a runner.
I am a runner.
Long distance.
Yeah.
Runner.
Yes, I have a preference for the long distance.
Yeah.
And define long distance, please.
So I've definitely been getting into the ultras of late. So I did my first, been running basically since I was about 17.
Yeah. So you're that's 10 years now?
Just a couple more years, but that's okay. To be honest with you, I actually took up running because I wanted to join the police force at the time, and you needed to pass a physical. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll start running. Didn't end up joining the police force and just kept running. And then when I had my son, he's now 15, I got back into running as a way of getting fit again and just sort of, you know, losing some of the baby weight and so on. And then always had a goal to do a half marathon, did the half marathon, did a few, then I went, maybe a marathon would be good. And so I tried a couple of times to do a marathon but got injured. So I had a couple of stress fractures and things like that.
Fun stuff.
Yes, the fun stuff. And then, finally ended up doing my first marathon in 2015. I've done a few since then, and then I thought, why not go longer? So I've done two ultras since then, and then I was meant to be doing 6 foot track this year, but as many of us, lots of our events got cancelled. But I do have one event coming up, an ultra event called the Clint Eastwood Last One Standing.
Yeah.
Can you just elaborate on that, because that is a good race.
Yes. So this one is still due to go ahead. It's in middle of August in Brisbane, and it's basically a 6.83 kilometer loop that you do on the hour every hour until there is no one left standing, until there's one person. They then have to complete the loop, and then that's it. So essentially everyone is a DNF except for one person.
But that last person could still be DNF if you don't finish that lap.
Correct.
So everybody could DNF the race.
Correct.
So you are you'll either win or you'll DNF.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. That's
so the gentleman that won it last year, so they had 67 people took part last year, and the guy that won it did 41 laps.
41 times 7 laps.
So that's 41 hours.
41 hours, yeah.
Yeah. Is it trail or road?
No, so it's not road, it's grass. So it's, so a little bit less impact, not too hilly, anything like that. But a bit of a kicker, it starts at 1 a.m. in the morning.
So that's
just to add another layer of complexity.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So cool. How do you train for that? Like, obviously you run heaps, but in terms of, like, I guess from two perspectives, the nighttime stuff and also the stop-start, like, What are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first one with the nighttime is a little bit scary for me because I'm one of those people that's like, let's get up early, get the run done. You know, 5 a.m., I'm out the door, get it done. So having that thought of starting a lot, you know, sort of to the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So definitely I've got some long runs coming up that will start later in the night as part of my training. And then the stop start, I've actually been doing a few of my long runs where I'm actually doing them on the hour. So I've picked a 7K loop, do that on the hour, stop, sit, then get going again.
You almost have to cool down, sit down, get stiff and then go again.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's hard. Yeah.
Oh, I just can't imagine like 12, 15, 20 hours in there, just like, I have to get up again.
Yeah, that's hard.
Could you imagine the first lap? Like, I've done like 6.8 Ks, so I might just sit down now.
And the track, and the you know, the thing too, the strategy of it too is, do you do the laps as fast as you can because it's 7K and get more rest time, or do you do the laps a little bit slower?
And plod along and just go next hour.
Yeah, so that you're, or do you do a bit of run walk as well for some of
them? Is there also an hour limit? So if you don't make it within the hour, you're cut off as well. So you can't just go, cool, I'm going to walk a lap and run a lap and just.
Yeah, you have to sort of be back in just before the by the hour and then back on the start line.
Yeah.
So is it better to just run non-stop for
like really slow?
Really slow for 48 hours or however long it's going to take. We don't know. That's the thing. There's no end to this race. I'm going to run for 36 hours and I'm done.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to run for this distance and I'm done. I'm going to run until everybody else dies and then I have to run a bit more.
Yeah. And that's what really drew me to this event, actually, is I wanted to do something that wasn't specifically time-based or distance-based. So, you know, like it wasn't doing 100K or it wasn't doing a 12-hour race. It was, let's just see how far you can go for. But the other thing, and, you know, to come back to the nutrition side, with this particular event, you're not allowed any nutrition or support on the loop. So everything that you eat and drink and everything has to happen in that time when you're back at the start.
But you couldn't take a gel in your pocket?
No. So so you're not meant to have anything while you're actually doing your lap. So that whole idea of, you know, whether you need a micro sleep or consume some food or hydration or change shoes or anything, all has to happen within that hour, plus running the 6.83K.
Yeah.
Hectic.
So that adds a little complexity to it as well.
I guess the thing I love about these races is they're so equal. Like, because you don't have to be fast. You don't have to be elite. It's 7Ks in an hour, which is pretty fucking slow.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much anyone should be able to do that. You can be male, female, young or old.
Absolutely.
And just how long can you go for?
Yeah, and it's just how tough are you?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
How well do you deal with sleep deprivation?
Yeah.
Yeah, the other day I even went around the bay run, and which I actually was like, okay, I'm actually just going to walk this and see how fast I can walk. And I could actually walk it in under an hour. I'm like, so that's a little bit of a positive as well. So I could potentially run well.
Yeah. Just for people that know, the bay run is actually 6.8 kilometers.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's a perfect distance to sort of train on.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So I think it's an interesting time to talk nutrition just from a completely perfect from a selfish point of view, because I just attempted to do an ultra marathon 2 days ago and kind of failed, and Lisa was involved in a different ultra marathon on the same weekend, so there's a bit of like long distance stuff happening at this point of view, at this point in time.
For me, I'm training for an Ironman and I'm like fueling and stuff and that sort of stuff. I have no idea, because I'll be swimming for 2 hours, hopefully less, but probably more. I can't eat in the water. So, what the hell am I going to do?
And part of that too, with a triathlon type event too, you've got to allow your body, when you come out of the water, you've actually got to allow your body some time to flush through, because you will have taken on some water during the swim, regardless of whether there will be some. So you almost need a good 15, 20 minutes of just water just to help flush, settle any, stomach issues that might be going on before you then. But I think that's what it comes down to, I think, with nutrition. So for me, I often get asked, well, what's the right nutrition? Like, what should a runner, what's the right nutrition for a runner? And my answer is always, it's whatever is right for you. And it very much comes down to the event you're doing, you know, where you're at with other things, you know, how much stress you've got going on, you know, whether you're sleeping properly and things like that. But it also comes down to the particular race. Like, what you do in a half marathon may be very different to a marathon and may be very different to, say, a swim run event that you do. So, and it depends on the time of year and, you know, is it going to be a hot climate, is it going to be colder, like what do you actually need?
So so it's super complex, basically.
It is.
And I think the way I kind of wanted to approach this is the reason we have all these discussions around nutrition is because there's no one answer. Like, we don't know. It's not one way to do it. It's so individual. So I kind of want to open it up and just say, what's your bias? Like, everyone has their own bias. I'm vegetarian, and like that's a thing that I operate around. And Mike's Dutch, so he smokes weed and has a lot of potato.
That's my diet.
Like, what's your even on a personal level, or what's your bias? Like, what do you tend towards?
Yeah, so you know, I do a mix of things, and I'm always trying something different on every run, so that I've got the way I like to look at. I guess my bias is having lots of different things that I could go to and have during a run, so that if I've got issues that day, you know, if I'm having a bit of an upset stomach, or if I've got flavor fatigue because I just cannot handle that gel anymore, or the Vegemite sandwich isn't working, I've got other options. So myself, like the run I did on Saturday, 30Ks, I actually had six different things with me. Three were gels, three were real food. I only needed four of them, but I always carried extra well, just in case. So I think you can, as I said, it all comes down to an individual, and you just have to try things and just see what works. And then you go, okay, that one worked great. I'll put that one aside. I know that works for me in certain races.
Yeah.
Now let's try something else and see, is that something I can add, or is that going to be an absolute no-go for me? But it is interesting. Like, you know, it is individual, but so often when I'm out on runs, people go, oh, yeah, I just never quite get my nutrition right. It sort of seems to be the thing that everyone sort of puts to the side, or sort of leaves as the last thing to think about, which I think is, you know, we do ourselves a disservice, because we train really hard for these events and we put in a lot of time, a lot of money goes into them as well. And if we don't get the nutrition right, it can be what can fall apart on race day.
Yes, it is super complex, and we can't give a blanket rule for everyone, but is there something that you go, even for a beginner runner or even for an experienced, like, these are the basics?
There are definitely some basics.
What are the things that people should do?
Yeah,
a general point of view,
there are some definite basics. So if we think back to, the body has about, so the stored energy form in our body is called glycogen, which is stored in our muscles and so on. Our body has about a 2-hour supply.
Oh, I always said 90 minutes.
Yeah, so it's about, no more than a kind of 90, that's 2 hours.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, if you're doing anything over 2 hours, you're really going to have to replace some fuel because you are going to sort of get to a point. So if you kind of use that as a basis, the general principles are anything over 60 to 75 minutes, you really shouldn't need anything fuel-wise. Whether you eat before training or not, before a race, that again comes down to individual preference, and we can talk about that. But certainly anything over that sort of 75 minutes, you're going to have to think about something. For something like a half marathon, you know, whether, you know, depending on your pace, you might be doing that in under 90 minutes, or you might be over 2 hours, you know, maybe one or two gels. And I only use the term gels just in the sense of, a gel has, ideally you're wanting about 30 grams of carbohydrate an hour. A gel's got roughly 23 to 25 depending on the brand. So maybe one or two gels will get you through. As you get longer, and this is where it comes down to more general principles, certainly once you're getting up over 4 to 5 hours, you need real food. You really cannot just get by on gels.
Why is that?
So you need to start replacing some of the protein and the fat that you're using as well. So it may be that you, you know, and if you're someone that prefers to have gels, then I'd be looking at gels that have got some amino acids in them, or, you know, some protein and so on in there. But real food is going to be better for you, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because you're getting that mix, because real food is a mix of nutrients and, and you know, protein, fat and carbohydrate. Yeah. It's not a single source. So you're going to be getting one of
those. What about Tailwind?
So,
because Tailwind reckon you don't need anything else all day.
Yeah, so the issue, Tailwind and other, I guess, liquid forms of carbohydrate would be how I would describe that. The challenge you have there is that you don't know exactly how much carbohydrate you're actually getting, you're intaking. And so if you're someone that has a few stomach issues, you may be getting more carbohydrate into the stomach than what the stomach can handle. And that then causes the abdominal cramps or the vomiting or that nauseous feeling or so on.
Is that what causes that? Too much
carbohydrate.
Right, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you need a good amount of water. So that's why often the gels often say consume with water.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to make sure that they're diluted a bit. So if you're then consuming gels and a Tailwind or some other form of carbohydrate-based liquid drink, you're potentially getting, you're overloading your stomach with carbohydrate.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like a big light bulb moment.
Yeah.
But for some people, a liquid form is the best way that they can take it on. Yep. But you could try other things like a little bit of honey diluted in with some water or some maple syrup or something like that as well.
I can just imagine chucking like a bottle of maple syrup on the
right.
When I did UTMB last year, my main gel or my main carb source was a honey flavored gel, and it was pretty much just like drinking honey. And it's just carbs, right? Yeah. Just kind of what your body wants.
Yeah. But so that's definitely something that's the same if you're having an electrolyte-based drink. You know, if you're putting electrolyte tablets or some sort of powder into your water, again, you've got to kind of, how do you know how much you're actually having as well? So
unless you're having all of it.
Correct.
And you go, and let's say 250 ml is one tablet, which is this much.
Yeah.
But if you take that over time, you don't know.
So I guess, and then coming back to general principles, we talk about race day. I mean, we all know don't try anything new on race day. And that's the same with your nutrition. And, you know, I always counsel clients that if they've got a big race coming up, find out what's on course and make a decision. Are they going to use what's on course at the aid stations or not? And, you know, if it's electrolyte tablet on offer, make sure you've tried it beforehand.
Yeah.
But also recognize that potentially, you know, when they make up those on race day, they're putting a big drum, heaps of water, and they throw the powder in. You have no idea what the concentration is. Yeah. So you might be relying on that as a way of replenishing some electrolytes, and it's just not high enough consistency to get what you need.
Yeah.
So, things to think about.
I have two big things I want to ask you, and they're kind of probably potentially intertwined. I'm not too sure, but you can choose how you want to talk about them.
Sure.
Ketogenesis
and
intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could potentially overlap.
Yes.
So this is not talking about race day. This is talking about just being a fit human in general.
Yep.
So ketogenesis is where you live on fat and no carbs, right?
Mm.
Like, what is that?
Well, there's different forms. So, you know, the idea of ketogenic diets is that, if you think about your plate, majority of your plate is more fat-based protein and smaller carbohydrate. And the carbohydrate that you're having is more from certain fruits or more vegetable-based. And it's not your starchy veg. You know, you tend to steer it away from potatoes and, pumpkin and grains and things like that. You're very much more on the other side. And look, you know, for some people, it works really well. And certainly from a research perspective outside of sports world, it has been very beneficial for children with epilepsy and other neurological conditions because, it's thought that the brain, and handles the less glucose better, et cetera. But from a sports perspective, it has become a lot more popular for people to take up a ketogenic diet. Again, it comes back to what works for you, and this is with the intermittent fasting as well. So there are so many different ways to do intermittent fasting, whether you 16-8, meaning you don't eat for 16 hours and then you have all your food in 8 hours, or whether you do 5 days of eating, 2 days of fasting. Like, there's so many variations of it. What I would suggest is that if whatever form of intermittent fasting, if it's or being ketogenic, works for you, and it's not affecting your training. So if you're still, if you are not noticing anything different in your energy levels, or you're still hitting the speeds that you want to in your interval sessions, if you're not noticing any changes like skin issues or maybe loss of hair, if you're a female, if you're having reproductive issues, you know, if you're starting to lose your monthly cycle, then that is an indication that it's not right for you. And you should potentially think about changing the way you you do it. With intermittent fasting, there is some research coming out that for women, it may not be such a great idea to train fasted, especially early in the morning. Largely cortisol, one of our big stress hormones, it's highest in the morning. When you then, if you are fasted, so you've got high cortisol, you then go and train, you spike up your cortisol even more because exercise is a stressor on the body. So if you do that repeatedly, you there's a risk of putting yourself into a sort of a long-term high cortisol sort of state, which can have detrimental effects long-term. So it can lead to additional fats, you know, abdominal fat storage and other issues. So potentially, certainly for, but there's more research coming in this. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of good research around women and sports and nutrition at this point in time. So there's more coming, but But I think, you know, back to, you know, keto, I think it also comes down to what you can sustain long term. I mean, I'm with Mike. Like, if I had to give up my grainy sourdough or my cold potatoes on a run, I absolutely love a cold potato with a bit of salt on a run. Like, that's one of my favorite things to have. I would struggle, but, you know.
So like you're saying, when you've got like 90 minutes to 2 hours worth of glycogen stores, and that's when you're relying on essentially like carbs, right, to get you through. And I guess the argument for keto, in from what I understand, is if you're fat adapted and you're burning fat as your primary fuel source as opposed to carbs as your primary fuel source, then you don't hit that 90 minutes to 2 hour wall. Because you just want fats already. And so it's more like a consistent release of energy throughout the day and not having to have a gel every 45 minutes. And that's and that allows you to then get through the run with less kind of like nutritional stuff. So I think that's kind of from people I've spoken to who follow the ketogenic way of living and eating and training, then that's kind of their argument. They're like, I don't need gels. I just like... you know, I have a steak and I run or whatever it might be.
And if that works for them, then that's great. But I also think you need to think longer term as well. You know, I've definitely heard of people that have gone fine for a couple of years, keto, and then suddenly realise that they're not hitting their peak performance anymore. And then if they sort of track back and they realise, oh, hang on a minute, things did start to go a bit off here, and then come back. But I definitely, you know, there is definitely some benefit in having in what's called training low. So having a couple of sessions a week where you're, you know, you maybe don't have something to eat beforehand, you know, you're in a slightly little bit more fasted state, but they would be sort of more, they're not the times to be going and doing your massive speed, you know, interval session where you're really trying to hit fast paces. That's more your, you know, your absorption run or your recovery run just to, you know.
So
get a bit adapted.
Do you ever intentionally do any fasted training?
Personally, I don't, because I find that for me, I wake up absolutely incredibly hungry. And then if I just end up, I feel nauseous if I don't have something to eat and then go out and run. So, but what I might have might just be half a banana. Like, so it's just not just like, something. I'll have a glass of water and half a banana or a tablespoon of nut butter or something like that. So just enough just to push, just to get that uneasy, queasy feeling away. And then go,
I don't know how people can have half a banana.
Like, I'm with Hayden.
See, the whole thing, it's a banana.
I mean, that's if I was not having, majority of the time, to be honest with you, majority of the time it's full banana, half a tablespoon of nut butter, and at the moment I'm having a pea protein milk just because I like to try different milks. So I was on almond milk for a while, now I'm on pea protein milk.
Something that popped up on my news feed, Mike mentioned this earlier, is some guy just ran 100 miles with no nutrition.
Just fast at 100 miles.
So
what I've read about it, initially it was like his stomach always gave him issues forever. It was like, doesn't work, not taking Safflon was better for him running wise. Then he went keto. I was like, bugger it, I'm just going to try to run 100 miles faster. My initial thought was, why? Except, like, oh, if your tummy is upset, I would say there's other options there. Mm. And besides, I want to see if I can do this.
Mm.
But from a healthy body, healthy mind point of view, what's your opinion?
Yeah, I would question the long-term or even just the recovery from that as well.
Hmm.
That's putting the body under just running 100 miles, yeah. putting the body under immense stress.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about the protein breakdown that'd be happening and, you know, all that sort of stuff, I'd be really curious did he have any water or anything? Water was the only thing.
Yeah.
I know, it's ridiculous.
It's mind-boggling, I have to say.
I'm impressed, yeah. But
I don't see...
I'm also why.
I'd love to know what his recovery has been like afterwards. True. That's, you know, I think...
That's so true.
You know, because the body can go without food for 4 to 5 days before it hits right into, you know, as part of that starvation mode. So, yes, it's doable, but I'd love to know what his recovery has been like afterwards.
Yeah, finish at Macca's. Smash 5 cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Because that's the role of, like, on a very basic level, protein is like muscle repair.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, if you're damaged, like doing 100 miles is damaging your muscles.
Yeah.
Like, forget about joints and bones and cartilage and ligaments. Like, you're tearing your muscles apart and you're not getting protein in.
Yeah.
And also you're depleting your body of all glycogen stores and you're not putting that back in. Yeah. Like, his brain would not have been functioning.
I was about to say, and that's the whole reason. So if I think about, you know, we talk about food before exercise.
Yeah.
For me, yes, depending on who you are, you know, how you cope, whether you need to eat before or after, before or not, it's fine. But to me, the big one is actually what you eat after.
Yeah.
So that is really important. And as you say, Patty, you need the protein. And you also need a little bit of carbohydrate because you need you need to spike your insulin a little bit to get the muscle protein synthesis happening again. And so the real importance of that post-training meal is that, yes, we need to replenish our stores, but we've got to get muscle repair and recovery happening.
Yeah.
We've got to get our brain to get out of its fog and not hit an energy slump later in the day.
Mm.
And we need to replenish our fluid loss. So, you know, it's really important to do that. And I'm a big believer you've got about a 30 minute to 2 hour window for that.
Mm.
If you're doing 2 training sessions in a day, and some people do, some of us do, especially if it's within an 8 hour window, you need to be closer to that 30 minutes that you're replenishing so that you're ready to go for your next session.
Yeah.
You know, later that day.
Yeah.
Or even if it's the next day. So, yeah, I'm a big believer in, you know, protein. And you don't necessarily have to have them at the same time. So, you know, often having that protein shake might be fine to have sort of straight after, as long as you then have a good carbohydrate source a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time to have your starchy carbs. So your sweet potatoes, grainy bread and so on after training, because your muscles, your cells are more receptive.
So if I just blend the potato and my protein shake.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm about to eat after we get off this call.
Yeah.
Is a wrap with a lot of potato stuff involved with it. And some nut butter, actually. Funnily enough.
Right, so it's
sweet.
You planned this.
So what happens to your body when you run 100Ks and smash 6 beers?
So you would have replaced a little bit of hydration.
Yeah, so it's a good thing.
There would have been a little bit of carb in there.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, that's great. Right.
So look. I mean, you know, moderation.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Moderation.
But so 6 is moderate for Pat, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So
And, you know, there's nothing like a really long run, you know, beer or a glass of champagne. I'm all for it, but just in moderation. And I think definitely where you potentially do, where people have to be a bit careful, is more going into a run, like what have you had the day before? Because alcohol definitely is a dehydration.
Mm.
You don't sleep properly. if you've had a lot of alcohol the night before, and that can really wreak havoc for you on the day of a run, whether it's a race or just a training run.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that just on that, the like when you like do a big event or a big run or whatever it might be, your body's like in an inflamed state. And people, we talk about like having an anti-inflammatory, like a tablet or a cream or something. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is basically a pro-inflammatory.
Yeah.
So it's like if you think about doing a race and then wanting to kind of recover, you probably shouldn't make your body more inflamed by having alcohol and also dehydrating at the same time.
Correct.
Like it's technically shit house.
Technically it's shit, but we all do it. Yeah.
But you can sort of combat that in a few ways is that you don't, you know, your first drink post the run or race isn't a beer.
So
it's
not cracking a beer or anything like that.
No, it's maybe always a beer.
Have a water, you know, maybe have a cup of coffee, have a chocolate milk, you know, something like that. Yeah. Have something to eat, then go have those post-race beers. Yeah. When you've had time to have a shower and you're feeling more relaxed and,
By the time Penny gets in the shower, it's like third shower beer, great.
By the time I have a shower, I'm drunk.
Well, and that's part of it too, right? Because if you think you're in such an energy depleted state as well, depending on the distance that you've run, alcohol is going to affect you a lot quicker as well.
Definitely.
So I remember finishing 6 foot and finding Paddy and going, it's not been that long. Yes, I'm a bit slower, but it's not been that long.
Yeah. Why is he so drunk?
That explains it.
Muscle cramps. How do you approach that?
Yep. So, I think, as in muscle cramps during a run. So I've been fortunate. I personally don't suffer from them too badly. I've experimented with salt tablets, though, and things like that just to, you know, as a way. I think if you, magnesium is usually often a culprit for cramps. I think if you do have a cramp on a run, potentially some water can help. I'd be looking at diet. If you're regularly cramping when you're on runs, I'd be looking at what your diet is like overall and making sure you're getting enough magnesium and a few other things.
Yeah. And enough training in as well.
Enough training.
Yeah,
definitely. I think if it's cramps, stomach cramps while you're on a run, if that happens to you and if it's sort of something that's never happened to you before, and normally you're fine with food, so the recommendation there is just to sort of skip the next feed cycle. So if you're sort of in a longer run and say you're eating every 40, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, whatever it is that works for you, kind of skip that next feed cycle. Just have some water. Let's see if everything settles down. And honestly, the best advice, if you feel like you're going to throw up, the actual best advice is go throw up. Will actually feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What and will that do to you, like hydration-wise, if you throw up?
Yeah, so that's why you've got to keep sipping the water. So that would be where, you know, you would just keep having just small sips of water that maybe you need to walk for a little bit just to settle the stomach down. But that's what I'd be thinking about. And, you know, if you're skipping one feed, you'll be okay because you want to get that. Because let's be honest, if the stomach cramps and you keep feeling that nauseous feeling, you're going to want to stop anyway.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to want to continue the event or the run. Yeah.
And also on that, if you throw up, you know, once, like that kind of cool makes sense. If you throw up multiple times, you wouldn't want to just drink straight water because you'd almost go hyponatremic, which is...
Yeah, so you'd need to be, if you're throwing up a lot, like if you're sort of in that where you're, to me that would be a bit of a warning sign that something else is going on and potentially you need to be thinking about is it your day to keep going?
Yeah.
There's always another day for that run.
I had my first experience with Cramp Fix, which is the product on the weekend. On the weekend, so I was cramping in both calves at the same time, and running on flat ground was kind of okay, but I was on a hilly trail, so anytime I went to push up a hill or up a step, but that calf would go into cramp, and then I'd push off the other foot, and that would go into cramp. So I had Cramp Fix, which was essentially just like vinegar in a bottle.
Yeah.
And horrendous, and it kind of like I was on like borderline disappointed. It like definitely subdued the cramps. It was like they're kind of going away. They're going away, but they went down to like 20% intensity and they stayed there. But like there are things you can do like that which will just like knock the cramp on the head.
Yeah,
it didn't fully fix it, but it gave me some relief short term.
Yeah,
but the cramps cramps still ended my day.
Yeah,
the other day. And that was like training. That's what I was.
My first experience with Cramp Fix was. I was cramping in UTA and someone gave me Cramp Fix. I was like, cool. I just went, and it came out straight away. Yeah. I was so shocked by the flavor. I was like,
yeah.
It went everywhere. I think I actually spat on a few people.
Yeah.
So, sorry. But my grams were fixed.
Really?
Well, the same thing. They were like subdued. Yeah. Like, cool. Yeah. I can get going again. It's still there.
Yeah.
I cramp later. It's fine.
I've got it, but I've never tried it. Yeah. So I just tend to have a bit of it's almost like an arsenal of all different things that sort of I've just got just in case to try it.
So just see if I'm running with a massive backpack.
Yeah.
Going, just in case.
Just in case.
I've got a spare tire in there.
Are there any sort of top three do's and don'ts?
Well, we talked about the big one, nothing new on race day is definitely the thing. But I would also, you mentioned, you know, too much water as well. So I also think that is an important one. Everyone has very different hydration levels.
Mm.
And there is a general guide of somewhere between sort of maybe 600 to, you know, mils to a litre per hour. But it's very, it really needs to be from an individual perspective and will definitely change depending on what the conditions are. I always, anytime I work with athletes, always go, have you done a fluid, you know, do you know how much fluid you lose in exercise? And it's an amazing number of people that don't do it, but you can simply weigh yourself before an hour of exercise or before a long run and weigh yourself afterwards, preferably no clothes both times, and the difference gives you a really good indication of how much fluid you've lost, and that can then help to inform your hydration strategy. And it's good to try it, you know, do it every so often, especially if it's a hotter day and things like that. So that would be my one. And then the third one is that post-run meal. Yeah. So important.
Mm.
It's really, that's the key to setting you up. You know, I don't believe in, personally, for me and for others, you know, the days of doing the big carb loading before events and so on, you know, that's very much kind of out the window now. I think there does need to be a little bit of a change to your diet before an event. And certainly, you know, for me, you know, I do a long run most weekends, you know, 2 days before I might add a little bit more salt to my, you know, my food, just a little bit, because I tend to, I'm a bit of a salt dumper, meaning, you know, get rid of a little bit more salt. I'm a sweaty Betty. Or I might have, you know, I'll have a piece of bread with my salad at lunch or something like that, just a little bit. And I also think about, you know, for me, I tend to be meat-free the day before a long run because I just don't run very well if I've had meat, because meat takes a bit longer to digest in the stomach. So for me, it doesn't work. And I also think about not having too much fiber, because fiber, again, like, it's just going to sit a little bit longer in the stomach, ferment a bit, and that can give, you know, sort of some of those cramping or, you know, gas and things like that. So that's what I tend to think about. But another thing I just thought of too, there is a lot of some stuff that's come out around doing mouth rinsing. I don't know if you guys heard it. So especially for the shorter events.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Yeah, where you might have, you know, maybe it's a half marathon or something like that, literally just swirling. So maybe it's something like a tailwind or something that's got a bit of carbohydrate, literally just swirling that around your mouth and spitting out again.
Yep.
You sort of got to get the taste receptors going a bit. You know, you'll get a little bit of digestion happening. That's just enough to fuel you through.
So it's like the receptors in your mouth, like literally sense, they go, oh, there's like a carbohydrate drink in my mouth, and that's enough to give you that kind of same output. It's probably not sustainable for an ultra marathon, because you obviously need the carbs in, but if you're in a half marathon and you're 4Ks out, you know, holy shit, how do I get to the end? It, like, Powerade in your mouth, swirl it around, spit it out, that gives you the boost.
Absolutely.
Really cool.
So that can be something.
Trick your brain.
Absolutely.
Just be careful what you spit. Especially these days.
COVID.
Cool. Is there anything else?
There probably is.
There's probably so many things.
Yeah.
But as Lisa said, it's so individual.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea if people have other questions, maybe some more individual questions, post them online. Shoot us a message on Facebook or Instagram, and we can just link back to Lisa and go, hey, because clearly Pat and I can't answer that properly. Yeah. We'll go, smash beers, right, fun.
And Lisa is on Instagram at Lisa_WholeLifeNutrition. And you did this thing a while back, which was like 30 days of salads, and you did a different salad every day and posted a photo of 30 salads in a row.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're ever looking for it, inspo, it's pretty good. Go there.
Yeah, I tend to, my Instagram is just a lot of the food I eat. So, yeah. I do a lot of home cooking, a lot of meal prep and so on. So, yeah.
Cool.
That's the...
So I think of one more thing. In regards to, is it hyponatremia in women? Mm-hmm. That tends to be a higher prevalence and higher risk, especially when you talk about like ultra endurance. Because one of my patients, he was going to a 100K run and then sort of died halfway, or not even halfway, due to hyponatremia. And there was something said in regards to, depending on where you are in your cycle, your thirst receptors don't work, so you're not thirsty depending on your cycle, which is messed up as a woman.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I was like, what?
So it's not just your taste receptors. There's a whole range of stuff that is different for a woman depending on where they are in their cycle. So if you sort of think, you know, a 28-day cycle, if you sort of kind of split, you know, you've got your first half of the cycle, second half. First half, we're in low hormone phase. So, you know, there's a lot of talk now about women training by their cycle, so eating and training by their cycle. So first half, because you're in sort of more of a low hormone phase, that you might be better, you know, that's when you can really lift a heavier weight, so you can really punch out those high intensity sort of sessions, and, you know, often, you know, you'll be hitting, you know, PBs and things like that, and especially first day of your cycle. And I think it was Paula Radcliffe actually, you know, got her marathon PB, you know, on first day, which everyone sort of goes, oh, my God, like, you know, did she really feel like running and stuff? So there's that. Then the second half of your cycle, when you're in a higher hormone phase, it can mess up a whole range, you know. So your ability to process carbohydrates is lessened, your, you know, more progesterone, so your gastrointestinal sort of function can slow down a little bit as well. So there's a number of things that definitely can impact. So but again, that, you know, I encourage women to just, you know, track their cycle and just see how they're feeling, like almost do a bit of a symptom, you know, like just a how do I feel, like on, you know, day of cycle, did this session, how did I feel, and just track that over time and get a feeling for if your cycle does affect your training. For some people it doesn't, so but definitely something to have a look at.
So it's like train with your cycle, not against it.
Absolutely, So there's talk around, you know, for the second half, that's when you do more of your recovery stuff, and you might do a bit more of your, you know, your Pilates or your, you know, your less strength intensive and more of your recovery absorption runs and things like that. And so really
more,
plan.
More maintained and improved.
And I think, I'm pretty sure it's one of the... I think it's the female soccer team that they're actually looking at doing that now. The Australian female soccer team, I think, is actually going through a whole training to cycle phase.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because it's like there's so much research out there in regards to young men between like 18 and 25 in college that are fit. And that's all.
And they're usually
the
cyclists as well. Yeah. You ever notice? They're usually
cyclists. And you're like, and cool, then this is my sample size, which won't apply to anyone else. Great.
Yeah. And I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the time, you know, they've not used women as subject because of hormonal differences. And so it's like, well, just put women on the pill and then that'll, you know, the oral contraceptive pill. But that doesn't solve things either. So, you know, you can't have that. So, I think there are some good researchers now that are focusing on women sports nutrition. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out in the next 5 to 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
Specific to women.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like with any endurance sport, there are so many factors that affect it. Like it'd be easier to measure like how heavy you can do one squat or how far you can throw one shot put or how high you can jump. It's very easy to do those things.
Yeah.
But when we're looking at how does it affect you over a 42-kilometer run, there are that many factors. Like it could just be windy. Like it might be humid. Like
that's
there are so many. So it's really hard to study these things, let alone study it just specific for one gender, let alone study it for a gender at a certain time of a cycle. Like it's so hard to study this stuff. And on top of that, there's not much financial reward for doing that study. You can't then design a product and sell millions of dollars.
Right.
So, like, it's hard to study these things. But it's happening. It's getting there.
Yeah.
Finally.
Absolutely.
So we're catching up.
Cool.
Yeah. Boom. That'll do me.
Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, chuck it online.
Yeah.
We'll circle back to it. We'll tag Lisa in it and
yeah.
Well, we'll go from there.
And it's on Instagram, it's at Lisa_WholeLifeNutrition. Sweet.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, guys.
Good. Thank you. Well, enjoy your last one standing race in August.
I know. Yes. Fingers crossed it's still going ahead at this point, but I'm going to do it as a virtual if it doesn't get ahead.
Well, we'll get you back on afterwards to share that experience.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be so fun
for
us.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, guys.